This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here. Another Inside Douglas County program, and as many of them, most of them, almost all of them seem to have a reflection these days of the COVID-19 situation. We're joined by Dr. John Powell from Evergreen Family Medicine, the urgent care director, a hospitalist, and the director of OcuHealth as well. Dr. Powell, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Well, thank you for having me, Kyle.
And first of all, because I've got to ask, what is a hospitalist?
Oh, okay. So it's a physician who takes care of patients that are in the hospital. I'm trained as a family physician, so I'm trained both as an inpatient and outpatient physician. But in our group, I serve primarily as a hospitalist and then also as the urgent care director, and I see patients there as well.
Interesting. All right. That was a term that I'd encountered before, but certainly not for a long time, and I thought I would just ask. So you put out a paper just recently about COVID-19 policy in an era of uncertainty. It's interesting timing that we're having the interview today because of an announcement made by the governor in the past couple of hours, and we'll get to that in a bit. But first, talk about sort of what you wanted to do and kind of the direction you wanted to communicate information with people. What kind of points were you trying to make for folks?
Yeah, well, thank you again for allowing me to explain the letter. I wrote the letter and I sent it to my elected representatives and to the governor, and I posted it on Evergreen Medicine social media sites. I don't usually use social media, by the way, but I felt that we had a perspective that was worth sharing with both policymakers and my community. As you said, I do serve as a medical director of both the hospital services and the urgent care for Evergreen. And our urgent care has seen many patients with COVID-like symptoms over the course of the last several months. And two of the first three confirmed cases in Douglas County passed through our urgent care. My colleagues and I've also, as you mentioned, cared for patients in the hospital, including those with COVID. And finally, I've visited patients with my staff to our community assisted living centers. And I've met with hospital administrators and the hospital medical director. And in short, I have some firsthand experience that gives me some standing to comment and provide an opinion. So this letter was not meant to speak to any other community other than mine, Roseburg, and the surrounding towns of Douglas County. The letter was meant to really accomplish three things. One, to identify patients who had suffered due to the unintended consequences of our current pandemic policy. They don't appear on a Johns Hopkins dashboard or in the media headlines, but I assure you they're real and they have a story to tell. And the second point was to learn from the story that they had to tell us. And we needed to factor in their experience as we go forward and transition into a new rational, measured, and data-informed response. And then thirdly, I wanted to inform my patients and the public that I serve that the fear is getting in the way at this point. Because at the end of the year, it's still going to be heart disease and cancer that will be the top killers in our population, not COVID-19. So to those who had a medical problem that was serious, those that had, for instance, chest pain or you're losing consciousness and you don't know why, those are reasons to seek out medical help. I'm not talking to the folks that have mild colds. I don't want you to go to the emergency department. But to those that had those severe symptoms and they were too afraid to seek help, I was speaking to those folks. It's really important to remember that our current approach to shelter in place and practice social distancing was never designed to eradicate COVID-19. It was meant to ensure that we avoid a mismatch between those that needed hospital care and those and our community's ability to provide it. It was also meant to reduce the exposure to our most vulnerable and buy us some time. So that policy has been helpful, and I'm very grateful for that. But ultimately, unfortunately, the virus is still going to be with us, and we're going to still need to move to the next phase. We're going to need to manage our approach to mitigate the total harm due to the pandemic, both the disease itself and, unfortunately, our policies to respond to it. The goals should be to minimize all harms in future policy. I want to emphasize that there will be no risk-free path going forward, and we really need to be honest about that. But the good news is that the virus is not nearly as lethal as initially advertised, and especially to those who are under 65 and healthy. But we just don't have time to wait for a vaccine to transition in the next phase. It takes 18 months. The devastation to our lives would just be too great. But I will say this, and I'm proud of the way that Douglas County has responded during this pause. I believe our community is ready to move to the next phase, and I realize that a one-size-fit-all approach just is not helpful. As I mentioned in my letter, Oregon's not New York and Roseburg's not Seattle. And we know our resources, we know our capabilities. Folks need to trust us to make good decisions.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things along the way in covering this is when you get information from various sources about epidemiology and different aspects about it. It was kind of hard at the front end for the average person to understand the difference between this and other flus and other past pandemic situations. And so you had people like Dr. Anthony Fauci out there and others. And one of the things that was clear is that not everybody was always on the same page as to what was going on and maybe some of the aspects of the coronavirus.
Boy, that's an understatement, Kyle. Our messaging publicly has not been good, and that's in part because, obviously, the testing difficulties that everyone had early on. But I think it's important to understand that all data is not created equal. If you look back at South Korea, they tested very early and often. They had data beginning in January, and they did a great job of containing the virus. Now, the question will be is how we use that information, and I think it's actually quite encouraging. I was somewhat confused because I was looking at the data. I did experience the 2009 pandemic. That was a rough disease. We had very young folks that were connected to ventilators in 2009, but that's not the risk in this particular disease. At least it appears based on South Korea data and based on now some more developed and more mature data. If you're younger than 65, your risk is much lower than first advertised. You remember when the World Health Organization first said that the mortality rate is approximately 3.4%, I believe. That translated to a death mortality rate in the world of 50 to 60 million people and maybe 2.5 million people in the United States. That caught everybody's attention. But it wasn't consistent with the South Korean data. And the reason it wasn't is because you remember at the same time we had incomplete information out of China. We had we had the Italy's catastrophe, and there was, I'm sure, a great deal of pressure to try to understand this virus more. And I don't want to assign any blame for this, but it's very important to understand that the initial modeling just wasn't correct. The folks that developed the modeling out of Great Britain were using basically the number of people who died divided by the number of people who were tested. And that just didn't explain the true prevalence of the disease.
And because of that initial data and looking at that and looking at what the implications were, then that led government actions starting in various locations as the coronavirus started popping up that have had big impacts on everything.
Right. Yeah, the problem has been how to respond to it, and I think the initial measures made a lot of sense. I was, again, very confused early on because I was looking at the South Korean data that you know, the mortality rate for those under the age of 30 was zero. They did not have any deaths, and they had thousands of cases. And if you look on their website now, they have zero deaths. And if you look at their mortality rate for those under age 60, it's a 0.2%. Again, that's several months of data now. And it now correlates somewhat to some of the preliminary antibody data that we have coming out of California, both the USC study and the Stanford studies. And if you look at the Germany antibody studies, we now know the prevalence of this disease is much higher than we initially understood. What that means is that the mortality rate is much less.
Going to take a break. Let's pause there for a moment. We need to take our break on Inside Douglas County. We'll come back with Dr. John Powell from Evergreen Family Medicine to talk more about COVID-19 policy in the era of uncertainty. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming at 1 on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Later today, KQEN Local Talk at 4, Northwest Wine Radio with Brian Calvert, looking at wine, beer, and spirits from around the Pacific Northwest. Dr. John Powell from Evergreen Family Medicine with us, the urgent care director, a hospitalist, and the director of OcuHealth as well. Dr. Powell, you were just going through some information from the presentation that you essentially put out on social media and sent off to folks about COVID-19 policy in an era of uncertainty. We had a shift today. We'll get to that in a few minutes from the state level. But talk more about analyzing the data and some of the things you've been involved in doing.
Well, I want to make it very clear that I'm not speaking for myself. I've looked for experts in the field, and I found them in both Dr. David Katz, who's a public health specialist out of Yale, but also Dr. John Ioannidis out of Stanford. And what they were seeing is something that I was understanding as well. I was wondering what I was missing. You know, Kyle, science is not a uniform discipline. It corrects itself over time as data becomes available. And I want to really make the point is that we're all trying to do the best with the information that we have, but ultimately we have to sometimes change directions and approaches based on what the data presents. And I was encouraged by the fact that someone else was seeing what I seem to be seeing as well. So if you knew that the mortality rate was not 3.4%, but closer to 0.1 to 0.2% for those under age 65, you might take different measures going forward as we address this, especially if you knew that we weren't going to have a vaccine for 18 months or so, and especially if you knew the dramatic economic consequences from the current shelter-in-place and social distancing orders and closure of non-essential businesses. When you think of 22 million people unemployed in 1 month, you know, we usually think it's a good month if we add 150,000 jobs a month. But if we have 22 million, that really tears at the social fabric of our society. And they really has an adverse effect on social determinants of health. I'm sure you know what that means. I mean, poverty, homelessness, domestic violence, mental illness. We just can't wait 18 months. So we have to go about this in a very logical fashion. We need to think about developing a solution that minimizes the overall harm, increases herd immunity, and protects our most vulnerable. And we can do that, especially now that we're understanding the large age risk differential and use it to our advantage.
So looking ahead at where we stand now, you've made a number of recommendations about things that should happen in terms of hospitals and businesses, et cetera. Talk more about that.
Well, first of all, I'm grateful for Governor Brown's relaxation of the elective procedure ban, because as we know that that was, and I'm not faulting that policy. Governor Brown was trying to preserve PPE, was trying to give hospitals a chance to refocus, and so, but I'm very glad that she understands that there are these unintended consequences that I mentioned in my letter to those who have elective procedures that really cause, in some ways, serious pain and serious problems that we have to deal with down the road that become emergencies. So basically what it's saying is she's trusting us to make good choices, and I appreciate that.
And the move today takes effect May 1st, which will allow a number of changes and certainly impact a lot of the medical offices and things that can't be done. One of the things I heard last week when I toured the COVID ward over at Mercy, though it has been made ready should it be needed, was talking about folks whose surgeries have been delayed because of the situation and because of the governor's executive order. And for some, seen a serious decline in their health, even in just a few weeks, because though it's classified as an elective procedure, it was something that without it being done, the folks' medical condition could go downhill fairly rapidly.
Yeah, I gave some examples of that happening in my letter, and there were many more. But there was confines of my time and space. But I gave an example of someone who had just mild anemia, and we knew that he needed an endoscopic procedure, but because it was considered elective at the time, that didn't happen. And so several weeks later, he presents to the emergency department with profound anemia and required admission and transfusion, and then he got his emergent endoscopic procedures.
And so now, with in addition to the relaxation with hospitals and other things, you talked too about wanting to see other things open back up.
Yeah, I think that if we knew the mortality rate was 0.1 to 0.2%, and we knew we weren't going to get a vaccine, we might not have closed our schools, because that population has very low risk, and we could start developing some herd immunity. So when this second wave comes, and I'm sorry to say that it will come, we will have not necessarily the impact, because if we continue to stay sheltered in place, everyone, the virus is not circulating. So what I'd much rather have, this fight against this virus has been described as a war, and I'm okay with that. But let's not carry this out as a World War II carpet bombing. Let's take a more surgical approach and identify those that are very vulnerable, those that are in nursing care facilities, those that are in assisted living facilities, those that have chronic illness, those that are elderly. Those folks need to be especially cautious. But the rest of those folks that are healthy under age 65, let's go.
And you talked about businesses, parks, other things reopening. Of course, we've been covering the request from Douglas County commissioners to the governor to let Southwestern Oregon move forward, and whether that happens as soon as the ask was or not. It's brought the issue to the table. Got about a minute left. What do you want to share with folks before we go?
Well, at the very beginning of this process, I was very concerned about the degree of fear. And I'm sorry, Kyle, your medium has not helped. The media has picked out the most extreme cases, and we need to do better at readjusting our perspective going forward, because people are really frightened. And right now what we need is rational, calm, measured responses. And unfortunately, the other part of the problem is that there has not been consistent messaging. And we need to do a better job of that. But science will get it right. I realize there's a big economic piece to this, and I realize there's a political piece to that, this as well. But in my view, it should be in that order in terms of priority. As we go forward, we should measure the science first.
All right, Dr. John Powell from Evergreen Family Medicine, COVID-19 policy in an era of uncertainty. Dr. Powell, thanks for being on this afternoon.
My pleasure, Kyle. Thank you.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.